I'm going to give a nice long introduction to JR of Block Report Radio in SF Bayview. JR, who's in the middle behind me here, is known as the Minister of Information, JR. Okay, let's give it up for the Minister of Information, JR. And he's host of Block Radio Report, associate editor of the San Francisco Bayview newspaper. He's produced a film called Operation Small Axe that has spread the stories of the Oscar Grant and Lavelle Mixon. Let's not forget about Lavelle, who gets a lot of coverage on Indie Bay, too. And so this has gone nationwide thanks to JR's work. He's does photography and multimedia in general, and he's a fierce proponent of independent media. Thank you for being here, JR. On this side here is Kelia Ramirez, or Ramirez. How do you say it, Kelia? Ramirez, okay. She's an author. She was a member of the KPFA news department until July of 2010, which is pretty recently. Currently, her main project is The End of Money, a critique of paying, owning, and working for a living. Willie was just talking about jobs, right? I think that's a big myth that people don't want to work. Well, where did that come from, right? So we need to, like Willie said, let people know we do want to work. And when we're working, we're not making trouble, right? We're not working, we're making trouble. We're out on the street saying, why don't we have jobs? The purpose of her project is to get people throughout the world to ask, why must we pay to live on the planet we're born on? Great question, right? Tiny is a good friend of mine. I keep running into her at FCC hearings at Stanford University when she brings out her posse from Poor News Network to show that, yeah, there are people here who of color who are interested in what the FCC is doing about making sure our internet is free, for crying out loud. And Tiny is a poverty scholar, revolutionary journalist. She's going to have the poets with spoken word here at 8 p.m. She calls herself a welfare queen, lecturer, and mixed race mama of Tubareo, who we just got a chair for. Hi, back there. There you are. Okay, he's up there waving to his mama. And grew up on the streets, right, Tiny? So she can tell it like it is. Renee Ann Giesler had a car accident this morning. She's okay, but she got banged up, so she won't be here. I'm sorry that our fourth panelist won't be there. But the topic is objectivity and the economy in the media and what role that plays. I'm going to start off with Tiny and move from this side to this side. We'll let them stay about 10 minutes each, talk to each other, and then answer your questions. Hi, Tiny.
Hey. Okay. Hi, everybody. Incarcerated for crimes of poverty, that's being homeless, poor, and on welfare in this capitalist society, currently at risk of falling back in those cracks. But I'm on this earth to save the world through the word and the process. Maybe me and mine's. Soy Tiny, hija de D, mama soltera de Tiburcio, la reina del welfare. I'm Tiny, daughter of D, African Boricua scholar, for without whom there would be no me. My son is here, Tiburcio, youth scholar at Poor Magazine, Marlon Crump, one of the revolutionary legal scholars at Poor. And we're in the house, and I'm just honored to be here with my comrade, JR, and other folks in the audience, Willie Ratcliffe and Kelly and everybody else doing all the good stuff, trying to resist the lies around media. And, you know, how do poor people, migrante people, houseless folks, working mamas on welfare, how do you make media when you're in struggle? You know, that's a really important and serious question. Because one of the main things that we do at Poor Magazine is challenge not only what is the media content, but who and how do you actually make sure voices that are intentionally silenced are really included. That's a very complex and difficult concept. Part of it is challenging the linguistic domination, the colonizer's notion of literacy. Whose literacy? Just because you have the money to publish your books, because you've deemed your knowledge the only knowledge that's acceptable, because you've deemed your language the language that is the one that's used for communication does that then make you the person that should be heard? The person that should be writing, holding the microphone, holding the video camera, holding the laptop? And how do you get access? And what is that lie about access anyway? So we challenge all of those things through different ways in real time at POUR. And all y'all are welcome to come through. We're a POUR people-led, Indigenous people-led organization. We do media arts and education. And we flip the notion of who's the educator and who's the student. So that's just a little bit about us. And I do want to say, I would not be doing the work that I do because I have a sixth grade education, but I have a PhD in poverty. If it wasn't for my mom, Adee, who wanted to make sure that silenced voices like ours was heard, not only heard, but included. So thank you, Mom Adee.
Thank you, Tiny. I'm JR, the Minister of Information, Black Reporter Radio, and also the San Francisco Bayview. I think the question that you asked is objectivity in making money. Is that basically the question?
Yes.
Let's talk about objectivity. I don't think there is a such thing as objectivity. I don't think that you can come objective. Either you're for the people or you're for the state. I think either you're going to give the state more time within your article or your broadcast, or you're going to let the people have it. And when you don't let the state in, you know, the state still has Channel 2, Channel 4, Channel 5, Channel 7, The Chronicle, The Examiner, The East Bay Express, KPFA Morning News, you know, all of that. State has all of that. Or Associated Press, all of that is in the state's pocket. So a lot of times we get some of these like media critics who really have no connection to the community. Want to talk about this journalist community and how we're journalists and we should be about objectivity. What they really mean is don't push for the people's side so hard. That's what they really mean. So, you know, we don't believe in objectivity. We fight for our community. I'm an organizer right here in this community right here. Also throughout Oakland, the Bay Area, nationwide. My radio show plays on KPFA, KPOO, in a number of other stations around the nation, on Flashpoints, on Transitions, on Traditions, on Hard Knock Radio, on KPFA. When it comes down to making money, I think we have to get more creative. We have to somehow get our people untuned from, I mean, let's take the local struggle of KPFA. Most listeners at KPFA don't know what to believe. You know, I see some of the people that support us and support the people's movement usually out there supporting the wrong crew.
Yep.
Some of it is political naivety. You know, some of it is malicious intent and opportunism. You know, and so we pointing it all out. And so what we have to do is get, we have to, as the people, be clear on what our interests are. And it sure is an Associated Press. You know, that's what the KPFA News subscribes to. Did you guys know that? By a show of hands, how many of you guys knew that?
Didn't know that.
You didn't know that, huh?
I did not know
so that. So that's why I equated them with the state. You know, the Chronicle,
yep.
KPFA News, KQED News.
$28,000
then it said that they paid for the Associated Press.
About a year or what?
A year. To subscribe to the same news broadcast that the Chronicle and so.
That would be my donation. $2 a year
subscribed to PNN.
So.
Just to clarify that, the reason that they pay that money, you get AP free. You don't even have to pay for it. But they get the day book, which is a daily listing of events. And the reason they need it is because they're not connected to the community. You don't need a day book. I never look at what's on Associated Press, and I have enough, never have enough time in an hour to get stuff on because everybody's calling at the same time.
Right.
$28,000 for a day book instead of a salary.
So that's what's going on at KPFA on the level of why doesn't the Block Report or Flashpoints or Hard Knock support, you know, that type of state-sponsored journalism? You know, hold on, let me finish, and then I'm gonna be here, and then we're gonna have a Q&A in a minute too. But I just want to get all this out, and then we can have something to talk about. But I think that the people, we have to be very clear on who represents what interests. Let's talk about the case of Nigel Foster by a show of hands. First off, how many of you guys listen to KPFA?
Stop.
How many of you have heard of Nigel Foster? Okay. About half of you guys that listen to KPFA. She was a black woman broadcaster that was beat by the police after Lois Withers in management lied and said that she was a trespasser. After she had been a broadcaster for over 12 years up to that point. She was kicked in the head, kicked between the legs, thrown to the ground. Her arm was crushed and it is still handicapped to this day. KPFA pushed charges on her. She fought the case for about 13 months before it was dropped. And KPFA basically shuffled the management. We made a big point about it on the Block Report, on Flashpoints, Hard Knock, the apprenticeship program. But Flashpoints and the Block Report broke it. And, you know, people was pissed off about that. Now, how does it tie in today with the morning show and what was happening with Sasha Lilly calling for the rally that some people participated in Tuesday or so? Now, Sasha Lilly was the interim program director at the time. She helped to engineer the cover-up. So when people say, oh, the KPFA management is union busting, and we're not necessarily pro-KPFA management, but we are anti-pro-police broadcasters too. You know, so if they get rid of the pro-police broadcasters, okay, you can have that one. You know, so that's what's really going on. But I say all that to come back to objectivity, because we believe that these people have objectivity, yet we don't know the connections behind the curtain on what these people are connected to. And it hurts our movements. How does it hurt our movement? Because the information is bad. You can't get that. How many times was Port News Network on the morning show a month?
Once for 24 minutes a month.
24 minutes a month.
It's threatened all the time.
That's what the impoverished scholars got a month.
And threatened all the time.
And threatened all the time. So I'm just saying that to say Nigel Foster didn't even make it to the KPFA news. Although it happened in KPFA. So these are who some of these people are that got fired that was with this. Amy Allison helped engineer the cover-up. And I think it's important to tell you guys this because it's a civil war being waged at the station. And it's not two factions, there's three factions. There's the management, there's the Yanagement, which is the union management, or, you know, the union and former management. And then there's the paid and unpaid people that care about what's going on the airwaves. So I represent that group at KPFA that's really fighting to make radio accessible to the people and to promote events like this. You know, to promote Indie Bay Media or Poor News Network or The Bayview, and people who are not tied to some huge corporate or government interests. You know, so, you know, if you guys want to get more controversial, you can ask the right questions and kick it off.
All right, thank you, JR.
Oh,
Hello, I'm Kelly Overmars. Thank you for having me, and happy anniversary, Indie Media.
Thank you.
I got to read here. I'm sorry, I don't see very well anymore. Objectivity does not exist in journalism or any other sphere. That is what quantum physicists have been telling us now for nearly a century. The Heisenberg uncertainty principle tells us that what you know about a quantum particle depends on what you measure. You can know that its position, but you cannot determine at the same time where it's going, or vice versa. You can't even call it a particle all the time because sometimes it acts like a wave. And experiments show that whether you see a wave or a particle depends on what you expect to see. Seeing what we expect to see also explains the results of polls that elicit certain types of answers depending on how the question is formulated. Some people even suggest that seeing what we expect to see is how we experience the world. So, if there's no such thing as objectivity, what passes for objectivity in journalism, and is it any good? Well, there's several definitions of journalistic objectivity. I'll offer you just a few. Objectivity can mean not investing yourself in the outcome of the story. On my very first night at KPFA News 11 years ago, news director Mark Maracle took the interns on a tour of the station. We stopped by a bulletin board where there was a quote from NPR's Bob Edwards. He said, "I don't care about the outcome of my stories. That's Pacifica." Now, imagine you're in a hospital and your surgeon walks up to you and says, "Hi, I'm Dr. So-and-so. I'll be performing your surgery today. I'll take out that tumor," or more or less. Or your roofer, "Oh, hi, I'm your roofer, and I will repair the holes in your roof before the winter rain set in, or not." I mean, in what other field of endeavor does not caring about the outcome of your work be a good thing? Right? So that's one thing. Objectivity can also take the form of what I call he said, she said journalism. As New York Times columnist Russell Baker wrote in the classic example, a refugee from Nazi Germany who appears on television to say monstrous things are going on in his homeland must be followed by a Nazi spokesperson saying that Adolf Hitler is the greatest boon to humanity since pasteurized milk. The American press has always had a tendency to assume that the truth is somewhere exactly between two opposing viewpoints. Thus, if the press presents the man who says that Hitler is an ogre, and the man who says that Hitler is a prince, it believes that it has done the full measure of its journalistic duty. But the truth is that in even the seemingly obvious case of Hitler, it's neither simple nor objective. If you were Jewish diarist Anne Frank, Hitler was an ogre. If you were Prescott Bush, the father and grandfather of two U.S. presidents and financier of the Nazi regime, Hitler was a prince. To me, objectivity is best described as a group agreement on what a particular set of facts tells us about a person or a situation. And all too often, that group agreement, like history itself, is written by the victors. Our duty as alternative journalists is to expand the public's subjective points of view beyond that group agreement written by the racist, sexist, ageist, classist, imperialist, militarist, corporatist, xenophobic, homophobic terrormongers. Have I gotten everybody? No, if I missed something there, just mentally insert the category. But first, we must also look at the blocks and the limitations that we face in such a task. Watergate journalist Carl Bernstein described the point of good journalism as getting the best available version of the truth. To me, the words obtainable version are the key. We must realize that our ability to obtain the truth is compromised by many factors, some psychological and some economic. Among the economic limitations are the fact that many databases and expert reports are proprietary. And especially at the level of community journalism, we may not have access to them because we don't have the funds. Government agencies may refuse us access to documents we ask for in a Freedom of Information Act request. And we don't have the legal resources to fight the government in court. Information is a commodity which is bought and sold, although the currency is not always money. Chris Hedges wrote, "When reporting depends heavily on access, it becomes very difficult to challenge who grants or denies that access. This craven desire for access has turned huge sections of the Washington press, along with most business reporters, into courtiers. The need to be included in press briefings, in background interviews with government or business officials, as well as the desire for leaks and early access to official documents, obliterates journalistic autonomy. Indie media has embarked on a new journalism that is not so dependent on access to officials because it recognizes that officials are not the only source of news. Expanding one's viewpoint beyond the group agreement often means seeking knowledge outside the group. Experts are useful, but who is an expert should always be an open question. Despite the 24/7 news cycle, we have time limits in broadcast journalism and space limits in traditional newspapers and magazines when they are available at all these days. Editors value breadth over depth, especially in daily news, demanding shorter and shorter stories and news hook events that make the government, the corporation, or the activist the determiner of what is a story. I'll make up my own mind on that, thank you. The demand for brevity makes investigative journalism a very endangered species right when we need it most. If we continue down, it's very difficult in three minutes to put today's events into an historical context and to project out what the possible futures might be if we continue down that current road or choose another, or what those other roads might be. Today's journalism often panders to the fast-paced ADD culture. News blogs often demand that their writers not exceed 400 to 600 words. The public needs to look at past, present, and an array of possible futures to be socially engaged and politically active in a meaningful way. That means taking an investment of time by both the journalists and the public. Web-based outlets like Indie Media have an advantage here, as the internet is practically infinite. However, the downside is finding the information on the web. We need net neutrality and better search technologies. We also must realize that every story, whether it's street crime or war or science or sports, is in essence an economic story, because power relationships described by money and are the basis of most human interactions, from the marriage between two people to the trade imbalance between two nations to the injustices between global north and global south. Having recognized the economic basis for all stories, we must question the economic foundation of the world. Journalists, especially those who label themselves community, alternative, or radical, should be among the first people to ask, why must we pay to live on the planet we're born on? They must ask it repeatedly so that the public can imagine a possible future different from the one that is presented to us by the current economic system. And they must ask it even when they cover the now that's governed by a group agreement written by the financial class that says we must have a money-based world, there is no other way to organize the world, and if you can't succeed in that world, well, it sucks to be you, doesn't it? In Indie Media, we have today a model of a future world in which information is not a commodity, where the expert is not always from the capital city or a major university, and where the truth is not sacrificed to the false god of objectivity. It is a place where journalists can view the facts through a subjective lens that carries the moral filter of Anne Frank and not Prescott Bush. May history record that in Seattle, in December of 1999, a new journalism for a new world was born. Thank you.
You guys want to ask a couple of questions, or shall I field these burning questions from our audience? Do you have anything to ask each other? No, I didn't think so. Okay. I have a feeling I'm going to have to moderate this one carefully, right? We believe in freedom of speech, but we want to stay on topic. I want to announce that Paul from Berkeley Liberation Radio is here. He's got the booth. He just came in, and he's got his pirate flag back there. So we're talking a lot about radio, and I know we all have a lot of questions about objectivity and the economy and, you know, any base anti-capitalist, anti-oppression. So that plays into all this conversation. Who's got a burning question? Come on up. I want you to speak into the mic so we all can hear. All right, come on up, then. Don't be shy. Good. Because we heard a lot of good stuff from these folks. And I know you wanted to ask your question earlier. You've been waiting a long time. So here you go.
Yes, I'm understanding all these donations and stuff. How much of it is, what percentage of it is tax write-offs that these people are donating to this place?
That's an excellent question.
You know, well, how much of it is really donation for the good, and how much of it is for what's in their pockets? Anybody got an answer for that?
Well, if you donate, for example, to KPFA, that's 501c3, and you can write that off your taxes. People claim that without that tax write-off, donations in general to any 501c3 will go down. I don't know if that's true or not. I would imagine that for the corporations, that tax deduction is really important. I would imagine that for the people who really believe that KPFA or any other 501c3 is important, that would be less of a concern.
The thing of it is like, I just so happen to walk up on this, okay? And I haven't dealt a lot with radio, but I have dealt with Jackson Bailey, with the newspapers and things like that. But the thing of it is getting the information out there is very hard for you guys if you don't have the funding. How much is funded to you guys?
Well, IndieBay gets, I mean, we have a very low budget. It was like $4,000 a year. I mean, and we get that donation without too much trouble. Thank you, everybody, who donated. The trick is we got to get the word out that there is access through IndieBay. And it's free to you. It's free to our citizen journalists. And I'm going to let somebody else talk about funding from their points of view. But we can, as long as we use the media we have, and it is free, and as long as it's free, as long as we have net neutrality, which is going to come up in our next panel, we need to take advantage of all that.
If you want to address that, JR.
Okay. Well, the Block Report, how we fund the Block Report is basically we've been selling these DVDs. You have the DVD operation, Small Lights over there. We're asking for a donation of $20. We sell T-shirts. You can ask for an ad from, get an ad from the San Francisco Bayview newspaper, because different from Indie Bay Media, we are trying to hire people so that this could be what they do all day, every day. You know, so we're operating on a different model, and we're trying to, you know, have a sustainable living, and we don't have to make a killing, but just a living. And, you know, where we can pay our rent, pay our bills, and get around. And, I mean, I'm living on a shoestring budget, basically. And so, you know, that's the reason we have to come out here and have a table at the Indie Bay Media Conference, you know, so that you guys can support financially what's going on if you support the Black Report or if you support the San Francisco Bay people. I mean, if you would like to donate, we definitely accept that. But like I said, with the Bayview, you can get an ad for what it is that you give. We organize events at the Black Dot Cafe. You know, and a lot of it just operates off of goodwill. When we have the money to do it, we can do it. When we don't have the money to travel here, we can't do it. You know, and if I don't have the money to make it to the station, then I can't record until I get the money to make it. Because I am an unpaid staff member at the radio show. And also with the Bayview, I mean, they do what they can to pay me. But it's not very regular. So it's, you know, the recession is hitting everybody. The good thing about it to me is you clear out the people who don't really want to be in it with the recession. And so, you know, even with KPFA, you know, some of us been working there, volunteer for 7 years. I've been there almost a decade working there. You know, a lot of people, we were talking a little bit about the morning show. I mean, we'll see if those people really care about the radio. They don't. Do you have to get paid to put out information and teach people? You know, well, the Black Report doesn't, and I mean, in a lot of ways, the Bayview doesn't, because Mr. Radcliffe himself takes a loss a lot of times. And, you know, to as the newspaper is a labor of love, and I can say that when, because I know the family personally, you know, and rent problems and car problems and this and that bill. So I'm saying that the good part of it is, like I said, it clears the people out, only the ones who want to be here. And the bad part of it is, you know, I think that we haven't been trained or educated in supporting what supports us. You know, a lot of us have cable. How many people have cable? How many of y'all have a subscription to the baby? Does cable teach you more than the baby? You know, does cable teach you more than the Black Report? But you pay every month. And I'm saying we gotta deal with these contradictions in our lives if independent media is gonna survive. I mean, I can't survive on thank yous. My landlord doesn't. He doesn't accept that, you know. And the printer that prints the baby doesn't accept that, you know. So we definitely appreciate the support of people who can't pay, but the people who can pay need to. I mean, especially if you're supporting something that's against the people.
Thank you.
Like CNN. How many of y'all got a Chronicle subscription?
Oh, nobody.
Okay, that's a good thing. Right, well, you're a newsman. So that, look, so I'm just saying that to say, though, and it's not to put anybody on the spot. It's really just to say we got to deal with the real life contradictions even in our own lives and support the media that supports us. Because, you know, the first question you should ask is, if I get beat up by the police, can I get on Flashpoints? Then it's right here. And if he don't let you on, you can at least argue with him. Or Willie Radcliffe. If he don't put you in the paper, they're at least accessible for you to change their mind. You know what I'm saying? But if you don't support that kind of media, and then you get this syndicated type of bullshit that's coming out of LA or New York or somewhere where you don't have access, support the media that supports you, basically.
Can I speak on that? I just want to break that down as well, because thank you for asking it. Poor Magazine started People School, Escuela de la Gente, because, again, I repeat, how do poor people, how do welfare mamas like myself, how do folks struggling actually become the ones holding the microphone, the camera, the pen? It's a complex struggle. And ain't no shame in the game of paying people for their work. And like Black Report, Poor Magazine, we pay people by any means necessary, and that means beg, borrow, and steal, because we're a lot of poor folks. But we know that for mamas who are working three jobs or underground economic hustles or doing our welfare and our food stamps and then something else, if we're going to write a story, it means we're taking an hour or two out of something else that we could have been doing to making some something, right? So that is real. And that's even the quote-unquote learning process. How do people become journalists? I'm sure that a lot of the people in this room have what I call the paper. You know, you're from institutions of formal institutions of learning. And that's who someone told you that you knew English or you were a media professional. A lot of our folks, like myself, ain't got nothing. No kind of formal education paper. But we want to have our voices heard because, like JR said, we're getting police harassed. We're getting stopped by INS agents. We're getting messed with by our welfare worker. We're getting kicked out of our SRO hotel for no good cause. And we need to fight, you know, in real time, because media is most definitely a real tool. We just had a story of Myron Standing Bear, indigenous elder who came to us living in his car with his two adult teenage sons. Ain't nobody trying to give him media. Poor Magazine not only wrote a story about him, but then we worked with our revolutionary partners, the Bayview, got the story out. HUD called us back, right? That's the power of media, to immediately impact poor communities and communities of color. So I see that as a very, very important piece, the money piece. As far as how we're supported, like the Black Report, we only get supported by y'all. We don't have any philanthropimps in our world. And I do call them that. And if there weren't children in the room, I also call them something else. But the first kinds of philanthropimping was done supporting eugenicists and actually pure race studies. So if you wonder if there's connections between racist classes media and racist classes academia, and you wonder why certain stories get out, that's because certain people are supporting it, right? So you sound like a great media professional. You should come over to Poor Magazine, and we actually cover people's BART because we're over in the city, so ain't no cost to come over and check us out. Indigenous Newsmaking Circle, first Tuesday of the month, open to all folk, multicultural, child care on site, and a good healthy meal. That's what I'm talking about.
There is a very difficult problem. I agree, JR and Tiny, what they have said. The people, as long as we have a rotten monetary system guided world, the people need to be supported. Unfortunately, two things occur. If you are trying to go for larger money from what you call the philanthropists, you find that they will support your buying something, your going somewhere. They will not support you. And that's the same thing even at KPFA. And it's an attitude that we have is on the left that we have got to get rid of. We have to support people, and then people will get whatever materials they need, however they can find them. There is no excuse for, you know, JR not being able to get to the station when he needs to. But we have this attitude that, oh, we are giving, if we give money to support the person, somehow they're freeloading, they're living off us. And that's just total garbage. We have to support each other, and that's how we're ultimately going to get to a moneyless society. My own situation right now, why did I leave KPFA? They cut me down to a level of unsustainability in what I was paid for as a newsmaker. I get paid as a board op. And I'm not there anymore because I'm not going to continue to try to put some newscasts on, however hard it is to do, working with people and not be able to make money to pay that landlord, to pay for the BART card, etc., while the Pacifica Foundation gets millions and millions of dollars. People like me and JR and Tiny don't see it. So we have to turn around and start supporting people rather than things. I think that's the corporate way to support things, to support people. Then, because you cannot do fully the work that needs to be done when you don't have the rent, the food, etc. And so if you want to see more, you need two things. One, for the current current time, is to support the people who are making the media that you need to hear. And then the second is to ask that question, why do we need this money? Why do we have to pay to live on the planet we're born on so that we can go ahead and challenge those SOBs who use our need to eat as a hammer over our heads to oppress us?
Then I'll have to ask your question in a second. I want to, Sol's going to put a little historical perspective on this for us. Sol, you need to come over here so you can speak right into the mic. Sol is from Berkeley Liberation Radio, and she came up and introduced herself to me and said, you know, I'm an anarchist. And I said, oh, I couldn't tell.
That's terrible.
Well, I'm
a raging
crane. I think my personal druthers would be the day that, first of all, give the history. Berkeley Liberation Radio initially was Free Radio Berkeley with Stephen Dunifer and such. And several of us in this room, including Paul, who's over there tabling for Berkeley Liberation Radio, have been with it since then. In 1999, when KPFA was shut down and dead air, it was Berkeley Liberation Radio who put their shit out on the street and gave you guys your air for KPFA. So when we speak about independent media, my druthers would be the day that Berkeley Liberation Radio 104.1 FM, who is in battle now with notices at our radio station for the FCC and our sister who has our antenna and transmitter, at notice. So we're in deep battle, and we've been very successful as a collective of women and men who are determined to not allow the FCC or any corporations feel that they could own the air, because we collectively feel that the air is our birthright, to breathe it, to feel it, to see it, and to smell it. So every time any of us go on air and do that direct action, we are doing it for all of you. My druthers would be the day that we get recognized within the movement of being in battle and being who we are. When you look at the time, we've been Berkeley Liberation Radio after KPFA being shut down. We reorganized, and so that's been 11 years. And prior to that, myself, Paul Griffin, and many others have been with the station 14 years. So the dream and the vision of collectively, because that's how we're going to get this right for our youth, our children, our future. It's giving that solidarity as we gave KPFA, is when KPFA gives Berkeley Liberation Radio a seat up here to have a voice. Because we are not bought and sold by corporations. No freaking foundations are paying our rent. We all take care of each other, and I just want to say that from the collective of great women and men with Berkeley Liberation Radio, 104.1 FM, and we are anarchists. And you can also find us at www.berkeleyliberationradio.net or local, Berkeley, Oakland, 104.1 FM. Anarchy is alive and well. These are for my brothers and sisters who daily are in the front lines of battle with the media and the air. And that's Berkeley Liberation Radio. No buttons.
All right, thank you, Sol. She was waiting so patiently, too. Dennis, you've been waiting. You want to make a comment? We've got to wrap this up in about 10 minutes so that we can get on to the next thing. But I'm sure from Dennis's perspective, we've got some support.
Thank you. And this is in the form of questions for the panelists. It's really about resources. Clearly, given the stranglehold that the banks has on our society and on everything, they've squeezed us. The equity that the poor and working class had was in their houses. The bankers have stolen that. If you actually are lucky enough to have a job, your pension funds are under attack now. Forget it, they're gone. They're almost gone now. They just produced $800 million in cash. So if you had, say, $5,000 in the bank, that just turned down to $2,000. Because if you throw $800 million in cash onto the market because you want to pay off Wall Street, all of a sudden, whatever you believe you're working stiff, you believe you can save $20 a week, gone. Resources. Back to KPFA. So if they have a certain amount of resources, JR, you can start by responding. Shouldn't it be, for instance, under the union contract, They have the right to lateral transfer, and management has the right to cancel programs, move programs around. So if we have, if you look at the station, for instance, if you look at the news department, right now I think they're probably down to 6 positions or 7 positions, but they had 9. 9 paid producers in the news department, and as you know, JR, they occupy the upper half, and Kelly, you know, they occupy, they have what? How many stations, Kelly? Workstations in the news department?
7
workstations, their own news studio, right? Their own downlink, uplink. We also have KPFB, a separate radio station, right? So, for instance, what about, in the name of sharing resources, say you cut the news budget in half, and you give it to sort of block report, hard knock radio, to do the block report, hard knock radio, morning show, and 4 o'clock show. Another, that's just a suggestion, you know, moving resources around. It's about shared resources, right? So, but the point, but we're imagining, under the current situation, a fairness in terms of the sharing of resources. So why not give 2 of the 7 stations to the block report and 2 of the 7 stations to Hard Knock Radio? Why not split the news budget in half? Why not get creative? Are we stuck? We're not under the contract, because the contract says if finances call, you can cancel programs outright. Sorry, we can't afford it. They could cancel. The Sunday morning show is a paid position now. It doesn't have to be. Why are you putting your money there on Sunday? Why not somewhere during the week? Have any idea of how to elaborate on this concept?
All right.
No doubt. I mean, we call it gentrification journalism.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, I definitely think that there's a lot of creative things, as Dennis just put out there, as to what could happen. Poor News Network does local news. You know, the Bayview does national and international news. You know, the Black Report does all of these news for way cheaper price, because we've been doing it for nothing. That's the Poor News Network. So a little something would help, you know, if we cut it really, really down and gave us something, we can make it work. So I just think that we have to be creative. I like what Kelly said about supporting different journalists, you know, because as Dennis just showed us, I mean, who's making these calls? It's definitely not the people. You know, because our news is not being represented. We're not being represented. So I think that, you know, people, if you genuinely care about KPFA, you need to ask these type of questions. You need to show up at the type of forums like this, like the ones KPFA hold, you know. And I think that's what really crystallizes the importance of, say, Indie Bay Media, so that we can have these type of forums broadcasted, because yeah, we can. There's a, like a selective type of thing at KPFA. You know, you have certain people in the morning who can go off and air all kind of internal politics. But if JR says something about what's going on in the station, it's an issue. You got the general manager trying to apologize on my behalf.
Yeah.
Without me even knowing.
Yeah.
I'm hearing it with the listeners. So, I mean, I think change is good. It's just we have to govern the change, and we have to get involved with the change, you know. So I think that we shouldn't be scared of it. Let's get involved. Let's be creative. Let's take a chance. I mean, anything is different than the pro police staff. An alternative schedule.
Yeah, like, you know, maybe JR, Tiny, put together what, you know, headlines by Four News Network and hourly headlines by Four News Network and the Block Report, you know, on the hour. And honestly, it's time to start imagining a new schedule for the one of the few places where there is still a tiny bit, no pun intended, of opening to transform, to change with a little bit of resource. But we need to imagine that, put it in concrete. What does this new schedule look like? How do we reallocate the resources for KPFA?
Dennis, I think you've got some good ideas. However, I'm going to throw another radical idea out here, something that actually I was kind of advocating 11 years ago. We have limited resources. We have changed technology from 11 years ago. We have indie media all throughout the world. We have the Block Report and Poor News Network and the pirate shows in Berkeley and everything else. Why bother keeping KPFA at all?
Wow.
We have...
We'll be here for an hour if we're going to go here.
No, we have a... You know, the Pacifica Foundation is a corporation like any other. And at 61 years old, it has become like any other corporation that gets to a certain age and size, protecting the privileges of those who run it. And maybe we've got too many other alternatives to keep one corporation running five stations alive when we've got so many other people and media ways that need work.
Nice conversation. Well, I mean, we can go all night with this. And we've got people from the Electronic Frontier Foundation coming for our next hour, which starts at 4:30. I hope everybody had a chance to ask their questions. If they didn't, there's plenty of opportunity to talk to these three. They're going to stick around a little bit, right?
Can I say one thing?
Yeah.
I do want to give a really short anecdote because I actually know that Poor News Network's histories of oppression within what I call KKKPFA have been buried since our inception there. My mom and me, houseless, dealing with our poverty scholarship and struggles, managed to get in through that little window of opportunity back in the first uprising, 99 or whatever. We got this half hour to begin with, and then they said they were going to make us weekly. They would say things to us like we had too much Spanish on our show. And that we didn't have people who could speak right. They used all kinds of racist and classist and border fascist images and words to us, and they got away with it because we were buried under, now I realize in retrospect, we were buried under this corporate gleam of the paid staff who would never release what was really going on behind. And, you know, we had a whole other world to fight. So we basically ejected ourselves from the snake pit, which is KPFA. But now, after this whole thing is coming up and Dennis is talking about visioning a new reality, we went back 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and asked them for two shows a month, two 24-minute shows. And once again, they put us through this insane process of hoops. We had to see general managers. We had to deal with all kinds of mess. And Andrea Smith, rest in peace, trying to fight for us to the end. But they pulled the second show idea at the very last minute and got us down and have since been threatening to take that one show off a month because, quote, too much Spanish and you have people who can't talk right. So this kind of oppression is very much alive within this gentrification journalism reality of the paid staff at KPFA. So just thank you for airing that, JR, and for being there as the comrade on the struggle and all y'all.
And can I just say, tune in blackreportradio.com. Also tune in to sfbayview.com and support us. I got Operation Small Lights is for sale. We got t-shirts for sale, and this goes directly to funding our media.
And poormagazine.org.
And poormagazine.org.
Poormagazine.org, and I have endmoney.info, which is trying to raise money for a book and a documentary. So endmoney.info as well. Thank you.
All right.
All right, since we're talking about... Thank you, you three.
Thank you.
I'll let you go back to your busy life. Radio workshop is starting very soon, around the corner past the bar. Do not go into the bar. Do not pass it out. Do not collect $200. Go straight to radio workshop. And that's just in a few minutes. But now, is it Food Not Bombs has brought something special for us? Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary, dear India. Happy anniversary to us. Because we're all in the media, right? Don't forget to post in the media. Oh, okay. Yeah, somebody's got to get a picture of David, Mark. You know who else is here? Tristan Anderson is here. He's one of our indie media reporters. Reported from Iraq, Europe, and Palestine. And here he comes up to be part of the indie media crew. But you all are indie media, because when you post, you make citizen journalism. All right. Here we go. Happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary. I'm so glad Tristan's back with us. Thumbs up, Tristan. Mark and Joe Birch. We're the people who are up in the middle of the night because we work our day jobs and then we edit your posts or not in the middle of the night. All right. Okay, we're going to cut the cake, and then we're going to start Pirate Radio Workshop right around the corner back here, just past the bathrooms, past the bar. Do not enter the bar. All right. And for 10 years, we get from Food Not Bombs a beautiful, chocolatey, heart-shaped cake. Thank you so much. Food today has been courtesy of Food Not Bombs. Raging Brains have a few more brownies left over there, maybe some chai tea. And in less than 5 minutes, we're going to have the Electronic Foundation, Frontier, and others up here. Yeah. Please be sure and come out to the show tonight. If you're a tabler, you come for free. Everybody else, we request a donation of $10 to defray some of the costs of being here at the Historic Continental Club. And I asked David, why is it historic? Because Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye in the 60s, this is back when West Oakland got more of the support it needed from the city, and we know what's happened since then. Okay, where's my EFF spokespeople? I want to get you up on the stage. I'm calling up Kevin Bankston, thank you, and Chris Conley of ACLU. And of course, Tracy, who's going to come up from Media Alliance, too. She will be our keynote speaker at around 5:30. I have to go grandbabysit. So I'm going to let Dennis Bernstein take over. Thank you, everybody. You've been a wonderful audience for my free emceeing skills. Dennis is the one with the radio voice. I want the grannies to help me introduce this next panel by singing about internet freedom. Can I get my grannies up here?
I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to go last.
Here come my grannies.
Those who say they're happy to go first.
Interesting
go
that first. We talked about the FCC earlier because they approved and gave licenses to a whole bunch of Christian stations in the Sacramento area. Okay? And yet they're trying to kick pirate radio off the waves. Go figure. Right? They don't have a vested interest. So we have our message for the FCC. It's about internet freedom. And this is our way of introducing the next topic, which is media law and internet privacy. Protect the internet. It must be free. No diverting or blocking. We are here to instruct the FCC. Say to Google, to Verizon, and to AT&T. Hands off the internet. It must be free. Hands off the internet. It must be free. That's it for the Raging Cranes. We've got to get back to the peninsula side, take care of dogs and animals and grandkids and all kinds of stuff. Dennis is going to take over from here. At 5:30, he'll introduce our keynote speaker. Right now, I'm going to let him introduce our speakers here. Actually, I'll introduce him, David, because I've got Dennis, because I've got the paperwork here. So, Kevin Bankston.
I'll go first.
Yeah.